Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Crickets. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and joining me once more on my left for today's special 2022 County Championship Round 10 review show, I'm delighted to say that I'm rejoined by Yorkshire County Cricket Club fan and aspiring cricket journalist, Mr. Kieran McCarthy. So Kieran, first things first, mate, thank you very much for coming back onto the podcast. Always a pleasure to get you on for a chat about all things county crickets. I have to ask, mate, how's your day been so far?
Not too bad. Thank you for having me. Not done too much. I got back from Scarborough sort of late-ish yesterday evening, so I've just been recharging this morning.
Yeah, I can imagine. Lots of travelling. Obviously a fantastic game as well, as we shall discuss in due course up at Scarbados, North Marine Road. What a ground that is as well. Great crowd, great atmosphere, just a great advert in general for County Championship cricket. But before we actually talk about that game between Surrey and Yorkshire, just for the listeners out there, because this is the Round 10 review show and this is our bumper episode, we've actually split it into two parts. So this is the Division 1 review. So we'll cover all five games in Division 1 this week. And then in part two, we'll cover the Division 2 games. So a little bit different this week. But with that being said, you get an extra episode. So silver linings, I suppose, at the end of the 10th round. But Kieran, you did mention that game, and that is, of course, the first place that we have to kickstart today's show off with, and that is up in Scarborough, where Surrey beat Yorkshire by 4 wickets in an absolute thriller up at North Marine Road. So seeing as you were there for the entire 4 days, mate, what did you make of the game itself? And I have to ask, did you ever see that conclusion taking place after a relatively quiet 3 days?
Yeah, no, I actually wrote in my report at the end of the third day that anything other than a draw looked very unlikely. The 2 Jamie Overton wickets at the end of day 3 pushed it sort of into Surrey's favour. I think at that point it looked very much like a draw was probably 80% and then a Surrey win was probably the other 20% at that point. I don't think there was much chance of a Yorkshire win. But obviously with Yorkshire still having 8 wickets in the shed and Surrey still having to bat after that, it looked really unlikely that anything other than a draw was going to happen. But an absolute grandstand finish after Surrey managed to skittle Yorkshire in the second session. It did sort of meander for sort of days 2 and 3. Day 1 was unbelievable as a Yorkshire fan, just a cricket fan as jet. In general, Adam Lyth hitting 150. Johnny Tattersall's maiden championship 100. He has got a first class 100 before, but his first championship 100. And he was the Yorkshire player that was put up to the press after the game. And through the entire of the press talking to him, he was just smiling the entire time. Like really, really nice for him. And he genuinely didn't look like he was going to get out if the Yorkshire innings didn't end. It looked like he could have batted forever, which in his first championship appearance of the season, just an unbelievable knock. And yeah, overall, a really, really good game of cricket.
Well, it was indeed. It really was, Kieran, a fantastic advert for the county championship. Again, that is going to be something which will be said a lot in today's show, but it was just a marvellous game of cricket for the fans in attendance at Scarbados. But before we jump the gun and we talk about the conclusion and Aaron Hardy hitting the winning runs, we just have to talk a bit about day one, because Yorkshire won the toss, elected to have a bat first in this game. And that seemed to have pretty much backfired, didn't it, early on? Tom Laws, in particular, incredibly impressive once again, finished with figures of 4 for 51. And at this stage, Yorkshire are in quite a bit of trouble. They're 125 for 5 in the 35th over of the match. But then, as you rightfully said, Kieran, Adam Lyth, who scored 183, Johnny Tattersall, 180 not out, those two put on 305 for the 6th wicket. It was a titanic partnership, and one which, to be honest, at that point, you're thinking, well, Yorkshire actually might be on top in this game. Of course, that isn't how it panned out at the end of the 4 days, but an outstanding display of batting from those two up in Scarborough this week. But then with the bat in hand for Surrey, we now have to talk about Surrey's batting performance, which, of course, set up this game for a grandstand finish. Kieran, a few words on Rory Burns, who this week was playing a bit of Burns ball, wasn't he? A brand new concept which we saw up at North Marine Road this week. He hit his 50 from 59 deliveries and ended on 132 from 260 balls. Just how impressive was that knock from the Surrey captain this week?
Yeah, it was obviously, as you say, 59 balls to get to his 50, really quick out of the blocks. And then as they got to the end of the day, he sort of slowed down, just sort of knocked it about a bit, and then came back the next day and just sort of exploded again. And as I said about Johnny Tattersall, didn't really look like getting out, which there is something to be said about the bowling for both sides in the first innings of either team's batting innings. Nobody really attacked the stumps enough. There was a lot of short stuff from both sides. But yeah, all credit to Rory Burns. Just a genuinely very good batting performance. And yeah, one that was needed when Yorkshire put on more than 500. Yeah.
Well, it was indeed, Kieran. And as you said, at this point in the game, you had 521 playing 515. And you think it's destined for a draw. And in fact, I can't just gloss over that 515 for Surrey without mentioning the likes of Hashim Amla. He scored 79. Ben Folkes chipped in with an excellent 86 now as well. But this moment in the game, you're thinking, surely it's going to be a draw. It can't be anything other than the points being shared this week. And then it happened, didn't it? A Yorkshire batting collapse, which was catalysed by some outstanding bowling from Jamie Overton. Figures of 6 for 61 from 17.5 overs. And Kieran, as a Yorkshire fan, what do you think was the real catalyst? What was the key moment which sparked this collapse for the White Rose this week?
I think the turning point was the two late wickets that Overton took on day two. He was one that in Surrey's first innings did bowl quite short, didn't really get it up there, and didn't look as dangerous as he had for a lot of the time this season. And then late on, the one that he got lithe with wasn't even too short. It just sort of reared up off the deck and took his glove. And when we were down in front of the pavilion, I can't remember who it was that got put up at the end of the day, but Adam Lythe was stood there. And Jamie Overton came past and said something along the lines of, "That was a good one that got you with, wasn't it?" It sounds like they're fairly good mates, because he was talking to him afterwards. And it was a very good ball. And then obviously you got Don Bess with one that would have knocked all three over, and then came back the next day and obviously just carried on in the same vein that he'd been bowling in before. I think without Overton taking that 6 for, the game probably does end as a draw. Johnny Tattersall's wicket was a big one as well. Obviously on the back of 180 not out, looked very unbothered, chanceless innings in the first. Whether or not it was out is another question. It looked like it had done a bit much and bounced a bit much for the spinners. There was quite a lot of turn, and it was a decent deck for a spinner. And it did look like it might have done a little bit too much. But yeah, all credit to Surrey how they bowled in their second bowling innings, yeah.
Indeed, Kieran, indeed. It was just another clinical display from this Surrey side, who just seem so buoyant with confidence at the moment, whether that is with bats or with ball in hand. And Jamie Overton, there is, of course, a reason why he's now playing Test cricket for England. In 6 matches in 2022, he's taken 27 wickets, an average of 22.92, and has also taken 2 5 wicket hauls. He's been unstoppable for Surrey in this year's County Championship, and this performance, again, was a fantastic display of just why he's so dangerous. He gets the ball talking, he's quick, and the other thing that I like about Jamie Overton, we saw this in the Somerset game, he's intimidating, isn't he? He loves to get into the fights, he loves to rile up the opposition. He's just an absolute menace to face if you are at the other end of the pitch against him. So, yeah, fair credit to Surrey. And again, it was a fantastic batting display, which saw them over the line in the end with overseas player Aaron Hardy chipping in with 40 not outs, hitting the winning runs and taking Surrey to a 4-wicket victory in the 44th over of their second innings. And Kieran, before we move on then to the next game, which saw Hampshire clobber my county of Warwickshire down in Southampton, just one question about this Surrey outfit. Do you think they can be caught at this stage of the season? They have not been beaten yet. They've got Essex at the Oval this week, then followed by Warwickshire the following week before we go on to our August break for the Royal London One Day Cup. Can anybody catch Surrey County Cricket Club, or for you, are they destined to be the champions this year?
I mean, at this point, having not lost a game and 15 points clear of Hampshire, which they are now, it looks unlikely that anyone is going to be able to beat them. Even without, you know, Sam Curran, Ollie Pope playing this week, they still looked very good. And obviously they've had Ben Folkes and Jamie Overton back, but without a lot of decent players, they have still looked very good. And with Kemar Roach returning, that very much helps things as well. I would say it is probably unlikely that anyone's going to catch them. It would be unlikely that it isn't Surrey at the top of the table by the end of the season.
I would agree with that analysis, to be honest. I just don't see anybody beating them. I'd absolutely love for my Bears to beat them, but if anything, we're relegation candidates at this moment in the season, so I highly doubt that's going to happen on a flat wicket of the Oval. But talking of the county, which could potentially pip Surrey to the post, given the strength and depth of their bowling units, let's talk about Hampshire County Cricket Club, who are, of course, looking for that maiden county championship win since 1973. It's been almost 50 years since the Southern County lifted this prestigious trophy. It's been quite the drought for a side of their calibre. But this week, they really did put together an incredibly complete performance, dispatching Warwickshire by 8 wickets down at the Aegeus Bowl to keep them right in the mix for this year's title hunt. Now, in terms of the game itself, the Bears won the toss, elected to have a bat first, which I thought was quite positive. And it seems to have paid off quite nicely, as Dom Sibley, he scored 56. Alex Davis, he put together quite a gritty 15, put on 63 runs for the opening wickets. However, after lunch, Warwickshire went from 87 for 2 to 104 for 6, which was catalysed by some clinical bowling from the likes of Kyle Abbott. He took 5 for 45, and the ever-reliable Keith Barker, who chips in with 2 for 59. Now, to give him some credit, Nathan McAndrew, our Australian all-rounder, did spare the blushes a little bit with a battling 63, but 217 all out on that wicket, and in those conditions, was simply never, ever going to be enough, and Hampshire rightfully dispatched the Bears with ease this week. Ian Holland, who's not had the best of seasons by his standards, was absolutely fantastic this week. He went on to score 99, and even as a Warwickshire fan, I was a bit gutted when he chipped on that ball from Danny Briggs behind to Michael Burgess, and he just looked completely disconsolate at the crease. He looked as though he was a statue out there. He could not believe he had hit that ball, and he was stranded on 99 outs. But aside from Ian Hollands, another player who really stood up to the mark this week was Liam Dawson, a dashing 92 from 164 balls to ultimately take Hampshire up to a convincing total of 390 for 7 declared on day 2. Kieran, before we talk about the Bears collapse and we talk about, well, let's be honest, the overall standings of the West Midlands side heading into the rest of the 2022 season, just a few words on that Hampshire bowling attack, who yet again were irrepressible this week. The likes of Abbott, the likes of Abbas, Weal, Barker, Dawson. Just how impressive and complete of a unit are they in this year's county championship?
Yeah, absolutely so. I mean, you look at the wickets that Hampshire took in the first innings. Obviously, Barker taking a few, Abbott taking a few. I think Abbas only took one. But if you look at those three guys, I believe all three of them are in the top 5 wicket takers in Division 1. And then to have a spinner as good as Liam Dawson to back that up as well. A really good seam attack. Obviously, Warwickshire have seen something in the pitch to have a bat first. But when you're looking at that seam attack specifically, it does look like a bit of an interesting decision, especially when you look at what's happened in the rest of the game. Maybe it might have been an idea. Obviously, they're trying to bat themselves out of the game in the first innings, but it does seem an interesting decision when you've got Keith Barker having taken 30-odd wickets, Abbas having taken 30-odd wickets, Cal Abbott having taken 30-odd wickets. That's a decision that could go your way or could maybe not, and obviously didn't. But, you know, obviously a really good seam attack. So, yeah.
Well, they are fantastic. That's the only way you can really describe this Hampshire unit. And spot on as well there, Kieran, with the stats. Yeah, three of the Hampshire bowlers are in the top five Division One wicket takers so far in 2022. Keith Barker's taken 38 wickets at 19.47. Kyle Abbott, 32 wickets at 23.9. And Mohammed Abbas, 30 wickets in seven matches with an average of 15.9. So, again, it is going to be very tough for Hampshire. They have got a bit of a mountain to climb, and they have got a very tough Surrey side to try and catch. But that seam attack, in my opinion at least, can definitely get the job done. And talking of getting the job done, Hampshire got the job done in this game quite sensationally. In fact, they bowled out the Bears for just 243 runs in the second innings. Michael Burgess scored 58, Alex Davis scored 46, but other than that, yet again, no real resistance from the Bears down in Southampton this week. That gave Hampshire a target of just 91 runs, which was chased down within just 17 overs to take them to a crucial 8-wicket victory. So fair play to Hampshire. They are an incredibly complete side, very, very clinical at home as well. And this was a majestic performance from the Southern County. But aside from Hampshire, Kieran, I just have to talk a little bit about the Bears because I'm genuinely worried now about this team. Of course, they were the county champions. They came into this season. There was a lot of expectations, a lot of hype. And to be honest, since the Somerset defeat in the third round, everything's just gone wrong. This is now a worrying, worrying trend in this year's county championship. They haven't won a game in seven games. Three losses, four draws. And I've got to be brutally honest, even in those draws, there was never any chance of securing a victory. And in two of them, the Yorkshire game and the Lancashire game, we were saved by the weather. This Warwickshire side, for some reason or the other, just cannot put together a complete package in 2022. So before I say my bit on the Bears, obviously heading into the rest of this year's championship, Kieran, where do you think it has gone wrong for the West Midlands County? Because last year, you look at the bowling attack with the likes of Norwell, Hannah Dolby, Briggs, Bresnan, Miles. It was a very compact and complete unit. And yet in 2022, there doesn't seem to be much incision with the ball, does there, in comparison to last year?
I don't know. If you look at the game that they just played this week, obviously Hannah Dolby's taken a few wickets. Nathan McAndrew, I believe, took three in the first innings. But yeah, other than that, you're sort of looking around going, like, where else is the inspiration coming from? Who else is going to get anything done? I think if you're looking at the bottom of the table, yeah, it does look a bit of a daunting prospect. I think Gloucestershire are going to prop up the table. Unfortunately, they've sort of fallen away. But if you look at how Somerset have performed last week especially, it does look a bit of an interesting finish for sort of the bottom. Well, obviously not bottom, because it does look like that's going to be Gloucestershire, but the other three sort of teams down there, three or four teams down there, it could be tough for any of them to you know, find themselves in a winning position, really.
Yeah, and unfortunately, Kieran, I'd agree. I really would. I think that Kent, Warwickshire and Somerset are in a real dogfight now. You could argue that maybe if Yorkshire or Northants do lose their game in hands, they could be dragged into it as well. But to be honest, I think those two sides are safe. In particular, Northants, because they've got quite a batting-friendly wicket at Wantage Road, where they've obviously succeeded in this year's championship. So for the Bears, honestly, I'm struggling to find solutions. I genuinely am, because we've tinkered with the batting lineup. Fair enough, this week Sam Hain was out with the England Lions. Couldn't do anything about that. But in the bowling department, I mentioned just how impressive, just how clinical that Hampshire unit have been. If you look at the Bears' bowling averages, in 2022. Liam Norwell's got the best average, 21.28. He's only played two games, though. Ollie Hannah-Dalby has been the talisman with 35 wickets, an average of 22.85. But after that, there isn't a single Bears bowler with an average below 40, which is incredibly concerning. Now, fair enough, at the early part of the season, we did have the issue with the balls. We had incredibly flat wickets, very batting-friendly conditions. In July, this is a different beast. You've got to start performing with the ball in hand. And the Bears, for the time being, simply haven't done that. And as if that wasn't worrying enough, aside from not having beaten Hampshire in the county championship since 2010, there is also quite a bit of a damning stat for the Bears, which doesn't make for great reading. Unfortunately, it's a very niche stat, which I did spend quite a lot of time researching. But I was thinking the other day, when was the last time the Bears won in the month of July? Kieran, if you had to have a guess, when would you think it was in terms of the year?
I'm going to assume, since you're posing me the question, it's going to be quite a shocking answer. Let's go 2019.
2019? That's a very, very good guess, Kieran. You're actually a few years off, though. 2016.
Yes.
2016. 6 years ago. It's been 2,202 days.
Not really ideal, is it?
No, not ideal, especially for a team which has got two more games in July against Kent and Surrey, respectively. So, again, the eternal optimist inside me says that the Bears can do it. And obviously, I'll back this team to the bitter end. But goodness me, it's going to be a dogfight. It really is going to be very, very hard for the Bears. And on the flip side of that, for Hampshire, again, incredibly impressed with them this week. I do have a bit of a soft spot for them. I think that's pretty obvious with the way I talk about them on the podcast. But genuinely, I think the end of the season between them and Surrey, we are in for an exciting conclusion, to say the very least. And this victory for Hampshire definitely does keep them in the mix for the championship title in 2022. But aside from the title race then, let's look again towards the bottom half of the table for our next game, where Northamptonshire beat Kent by 203 runs in Canterbury. So Northamptonshire won the toss, elected to have a bat first in this game, and this could not have backfired any more spectacularly if they tried. Captain Ricardo Vasconcelos getting out on the very first ball of the game to Matt Quinn for a platinum duck, which was staggering. I could not believe my eyes seeing that. I just turned on the stream and he was gone. Vasconcelos, the captain, who's been in excellent form all season, gone first ball of the game. And after that, you're thinking, oh, goodness me, Northants might be in some trouble here. But fortunately for the East Midlands County, they actually started to build some momentum with Emilio Gay producing an imperious 112 from 194 balls, which included 18 boundaries. And Ryan Rickleton, who we'll discuss in more detail as the podcast goes on, also chipping in with a very handy 55 as the pair put on a valuable 109-run stand for the second wicket to ultimately help take the visitors up to a somewhat commendable total of 303 all out in their first innings. Now, in response to this respectable batting display, Kent themselves put together a pretty solid first innings reply with the likes of Joe Denley. He scored 63, Jack Leaning also scored 63, and Jordan Cox, who chipped in with 72, all accumulating valuable scores to take the host up to a competitive total of 335 all out by the end of their first innings. And this is where I want to bring you in, Kieran, because at this stage of the game, I was thinking, very much as was the same in the Yorkshire-Surrey game, this might be a draw. Looking at the surface, although there were only 300-plus scores, there wasn't a ton in the pitch in comparison to other games that we saw around the country this week. With a 32-run lead in the first innings, did you ever think that Kent could potentially lose this game, or did you think they would have drawn from this particular stage?
You're looking at 300 plays, 300. Generally, you would be thinking that there could be a result. But, I mean, you look at the batting lineups. Obviously, Northants, a couple of members of the top, obviously Gay and Rickleton have been very good. So they could bat themselves into a decent position. But then you're looking at, are there going to be many wickets coming beyond that? Potentially not. Obviously, they've managed to to make a decent lead, declared, and then somehow skittled Ken out. I don't know how the pitch was playing. I've not really seen, I actually haven't seen any of the highlights from this game. But if you're looking at the second Kent innings, Simon Kerrigan taking five looks like it must have done a little bit for the spinners. You mentioned the Vasconcelos duck. I just want to bring to people's attention the way that North Ants tweeted how they'd lost that wicket. We're underway in Canterbury. Vasconcelos feathered the opening delivery to the keeper, so it's Rickleton in the middle with Gay. Just a fantastically understated way of saying that the opener's gone first ball.
Brilliant. Great stuff from North Ants' admin. For those who don't know the Twitter admin hierarchy, North Ants are quite up there, to be fair. They have been very, very good with their content in 2022. But before we talk about that fourth day performance, I suppose, and the spinning nature of the track, and I want to talk in particular about the likes of Simon Kerrigan and Rob Keogh in particular. Just a few words on Ryan Rickleton, Kieran. If we look at his performances so far for North Ants in this year's championship, he's only played the two games, but scores of 4, 103, 55 and 133. There's a reason he has a first-class average exceeding the 50s. How impressive has he been for this North Ants side at this pivotal stage of the season?
Yeah, it just looks like a really good signing after a couple of games, doesn't it? Hitting, well, only failing to pass 50 on one occasion and 200s in only two games looks like a very good signing. Obviously, if Vasconcelos gets out, you've still got Gay there and then you've got Rickleton to come in and rebuild. And obviously, that's what they did on the first day. And then again, Vasconcelos and Gay actually didn't get too many in their second innings. And Rickleton has made the bulk of the runs there, and that's probably what's won them that game. So yeah, it looks like a really good signing from North Ants. Yeah.
It has. It's been a very shrewd piece of business. I've wanted Ryan Rickleton in county cricket for a long time. He's been imperious for the Lions in South African domestic cricket, and he's adapted to county cricket like water off a duck's back. So I've been very impressed with him. I must say, I'm not surprised though, at all. He's a quality player. There's a reason why he plays Test cricket for South Africa. And again, he has just been a magnificent signing for the East Midlands County. So too is Jimmy Neesham. And we can't just gloss over his 91 from 101 balls. I think he even mentioned on Twitter that he was playing some trademark Bazball in Canterbury this week. So Jimmy Neesham deserved a mention as well. That is his last game for North Ants. So it's been quite the ride for Neesham across the T20 Blast. He's also played a couple of Champo games here and there, but goodness me, he's been an entertaining signing, and fingers crossed, North Ants fans, that he does come back to the club in 2023. But with the game poised now, we head forward to day 4, with Kent needing 365 runs in order to secure an albeit unlikely victory on home soil at the Spitfire Ground. And this is where the pitch began to turn. And this is where I can have as many excuses as I want to talk about the likes of Simon Kerrigan and Rob Keogh, two spin bowlers who I think an awful lot of, in particular Simon Kerrigan. His comeback, the journey back into county cricket after his experiences with performance anxiety and the yips, is nothing short of admirable. It's so good to see him back producing the goods as he used to in a Lancashire in the mid-2010s. And in this game, he took 5 for 43. Rob Keogh took 5 for 31. And one delivery from Simon Kerrigan. Kieran, I'm not sure if you've seen this or not, but it's the ball to Jordan Cox. This was a rip snorter. He pitched it on middle and leg. Jordan Cox, he didn't move his feet, unfortunately. He thought he'd read the turn and the flight of the ball. But he went forward in a forward defence. The ball turns, I'd say about 5 degrees at least, and castles his off stump. It was a jaffer. It was the very, very definition of a beauty from Simon Kerrigan this week. And that just catalysed the collapse for Kent out of nowhere. There were 4 ducks in the second innings for the home side. And Rob Keogh at the end, taking the winning wickets, a sharp catch from James Sales as well. And there was absolute elation for Northants in the South East this week, because for those who don't know, this is the club's first win in Division 1 of the County Championship since 2006. So not only is there all of that history, that unwanted streak has now been broken, but in the wider context, they've now got breathing space over the likes of Kent, Warwickshire and Somerset. So for Northants, Kieran, I have to ask, obviously a very, very complete and impressive performance, but do you think they're safe now in this year's County Championship?
Yeah, when you look at the table now, obviously having gone ahead of Yorkshire with that win, I believe Yorkshire did get docked 2 points for a slow over rate, so they would have been level on points. But yeah, obviously Yorkshire, Warwickshire, Kent, Somerset and Gloucestershire all below them. As we've said, Yorkshire probably aren't going to get pulled into it, but you know, if they don't, Northants probably won't be as well. I think it'll be one of, unfortunately, Warwickshire or Kent and Somerset that join, Gloucestershire going down, who look like have been cut adrift already, only on 55 points. And it's pretty cool because Northants shirt looks a lot like the England shirt, which isn't at all relevant, but it's just something that I noticed when I was looking at one of the reports that somebody wrote on the game earlier. Which Zach Crawley must have seen and thought, let's play like a test player, and then didn't. Which it's interesting because if you look at his average this season, I believe he's averaging 28 in first class cricket. Which if he wasn't already in the test team, nobody would be looking at him going, yeah, he wants to be playing test cricket. So yeah, but on Northants, aside from the point of Zach Crawley, yeah, I think they are safe now. Yeah.
I'd agree with that, to be honest, Kieran. I do think Northants have done enough. I mentioned as well the wanted road factor. They're very, very strong at home. I think they will be in Division 1 in 2023. And to be honest, I'm delighted for them. I like them as a club. They've always been incredibly friendly, incredibly hospitable as well. So, yeah, delighted for the Northants fans this week. And in particular, over that win, 16 years they've been waiting for that. So yeah, that's a lovely monkey off the back for the East Midlands side and something to take confidence with as well heading into the rest of this year's County Championship campaign. As for Kent, on the flip side, again, deeply disappointing. Really, really disappointing. When you look at the strength on paper of that batting lineup, you've got the leading run scorer in Division 1. You've got a couple of England players. You've got England Lions players. How that collapse was engineered in the first place, I think they'll be very, very disappointed. And it was a mix of some great bowling in the first innings from the likes of Jack White and Ben Sanderson, in the second innings, the likes of Kerrigan and Keogh. But at times this year, Kent have been the architects of their own downfall. And of course, aside from the bat in hand, you just look at the bowling performances. They've taken 14 bowling bonus points across their games this year. 14. It's the lowest across either division. So that is something. I spoke about Warwickshire's bowlers. For Kent, it's even more perilous. This has got to change right now. Literally, heading into that Warwickshire game, they've got to take 20 wickets. It's as simple as that. A lot easier said than done, admittedly. But this Kent bowling attack, for some reason or the other, just has got no rhythm. They don't seem to have much confidence. And to be honest, looking at the personnel, the strength in depth, I don't know where they could go from here. I'm genuinely concerned about Kent. Unless they can score a lot of runs, they don't seem to have the bowling capabilities to win games in the same extent that a Northants or a Yorkshire do. So, again, a bit like with Warwickshire, could be a bit of a dicey end to the season for Kent, but we shall have to wait and see. Stranger things have happened in this wonderful game that we call cricket in years gone by. But talking of the relegation battle then, and a side which, unfortunately, and I have absolutely no pleasure or pride in saying this, do seem to be Division 2 bound for 2023, are Gloucestershire County Cricket Club. Because the glorious Gloucesters lost to Essex by 9 wickets in Chelmsford this week. And in fact, the visitors won the toss in this game, elected to have a bat first, but were skittled out for just 136 runs within the space of 39 first innings overs. Now, this was in large part due to a certain Simon Harmer, And Kieran, I can see the smirk already appearing on your face. Any excuse to talk about the great man. But he took 5 for 45 in the first innings. And then out of absolutely nowhere, he goes and takes 8 for 112 in the second. A few words, if you can, if you haven't already run out of superlatives and adjectives to describe Simon Harmer's bowling, Kieran. How would you describe his exploits in the championship, in particular in these past couple of rounds?
He is just a bit of a joke of a cricketer, isn't he, at this point? A 13 for off the back of a 15 for 28 wickets in his last two first-class matches. Yeah, I mean, he's been the best bowler, the best spinner anyway, in the county championship for however many years. Again, looks like a bit of a weird one to put yourself into bat first, knowing that Simon Harmer is going to be coming on fairly quickly, but obviously you are going to have to face him at some point. And how any batting unit navigates batting against Simon Harmer, I'm unsure, because the amount of wickets that he takes just with so much ease, he is just invaluable to Essex.
He is indeed. He is the talisman, isn't he? He's the focal point of the Essex bowling attack. And you mentioned 28 wickets in his last two games. Simon Harmer was not even in the top 30 wicket takers before the eighth round of the championship this year. Skip forward to round 10. He's top in Division 1 at 40 wickets, an average of 20.87, five wicket hauls as well. And over the course of a glittering career, he's taken 27 five-wicket hauls in first-class cricket. He's a cheat code, isn't he? I think that's a good way of describing Simon Harmer. He just plays cricket on beginner difficulty. And the amount of turn he gets, the revs, the rotations, the flight, the guile, the drift, he possesses all the qualities of a high-caliber spin bowler. And boy, oh boy, is it not Essex's game. He has been outstanding ever since joining the club in 2017. So unsurprisingly, after bowling out Gloucestershire for 136 runs, Essex got off to a storming start to their first innings, with a certain Sir Alistair Cook scoring 145 from 311 balls to bring up his 73rd career first-class ton. Again, we talk about greats of the game, Kieran. I know Joe Root might be up there, but for the time being, is Sheff the best ever English batsman in first-class cricket?
I would like to say that it's Joe Root, just on the back of the past couple of years. But that's more in terms of test cricket, where, of course, Alistair Cook hit 12,000 test runs, I believe, whereas Root's just past 10,000. But for him to probably still be the best opening batsman in the country, even though he retired from test cricket 2-3 years ago, whenever it was. Yeah, he is quite good at cricket. And yeah, currently, probably he is the best English batsman ever. Whether or not Joe Root will live up to that and go beyond him at some point remains to be seen. But just how he has continued to dominate in first-class cricket, in county championship cricket, following the end of his test career is quite unbelievable. Yeah,
it really is. And it's funny, actually, I think I mentioned their best ever first class English batsman, and I just know I'm going to get a load of comments from Surrey fans. They'll mention the great Jack Hobbs, 61,760 first class runs. I am well aware of that. I should clarify, I meant test batsman, yeah, not first class batsman. Obviously Jack Hobbs the master would be ranked top of that list, but Sheff's been outstanding. He really has, and it's just a delight and a privilege and an honour, to be honest, to still watch him in county cricket, turning up week in, week out for Essex, producing these massive scores. He's just outstanding and an icon of the English game, to say the very least. But alongside Alistair Cook, Essex also had Tom Westley, producing a patient 90 from 243 balls. And at this age, Essex were dominating proceedings. They were 203 for one in just the 81st over of their innings. However, in a slight twist, as soon as Westley fell at the end of that over, Zafar Gohar, he took 5 for 84. Tom Price as well, really gifted young seam bowler, great prospect for Gloucestershire. He took 3 for 59. Catalysed a batting collapse, which saw 8 wickets fall within the space the next 30 overs to leave Essex all out for 310 runs. So from that dominating position, they could have won by an innings. Essex all of a sudden had actually let Gloucestershire back into the game. Or at least that's what we thought, until Simon Harmer saw that and replicated the Michael Jordan meme. I took that personally, and went and took 8 for 112 from just 27 overs. It left Essex needing hardly anything to chase down. In fact, they chased it down within just 17 overs. Nick Brown scoring 43 not out, Tom Westy scoring 21 not out. And ultimately, the hosts emerged victorious to secure their third consecutive county championship victory in a row within just 3 days. Kieran, a few words on Essex, actually, before we move on to the Lancashire versus Somerset game. But in terms of Essex, I know they're quite a few points behind Surrey and Hampshire at the moment, but they have got a game in hand. If, and it is a massive if they beat Surrey next week at the Oval, are Essex County Cricket Club dark horses for Division One in this year's county championship?
You would have to say that anyone that can beat Surrey this season would be. But yeah, a big asterisk next to if they can beat Surrey. If there is anybody that can, it would be one of Hampshire, Lancashire, Essex. But obviously they haven't lost a game yet, Surrey. They've won 5 of 9. So... yeah, it is a big asterisk, but if they can, there is nothing stopping them going on a run and going and, you know, challenging for the top spot. But, you know, the Surrey are the biggest roadblock you can possibly have in the way of that. And it's, I would say, after watching Surrey for the past 4 days, even when they weren't at their most inspiring, they weren't at the best, they still found a way to beat Yorkshire. So it looks like a tough task for them, for Essex to beat Surrey in the next game, I would say.
Yeah, I'll tend to agree, to be honest, with that. It is a lot easier said than done, and for us two talking about it, it sounds simple, doesn't it? Oh, Essex will just go and beat Surrey and the title race will be wide open again. But if there is one team to do it, and in particular, I look at the weather next week, there's a heatwave, for those who don't know, here in the UK. And I think the temperature in London is looking at around about 40 degrees, I think, 39 or 40. It's going to be a really, really hot week in South London. If, and it is a big if that surface begins to turn a little bit, Simon Harmer will be licking his lips and reveling in it. And he could potentially be the difference in that game.
Yeah. Having watched Don Best take a fifer against Surrey over the past 4 days, turning it well, flighting it well, Simon Harmer being the top wicket taker in Division 1 of county cricket at the minute, if a pitch is going to turn and Surrey have the same problems that they did against Don Best, there's every chance. But whether or not that does happen, who knows?
Exactly. Only time will tell, but it would be interesting, wouldn't it? If that pitch at the Oval does just become a little bit spin conducive, you do have a battle there with Simon Harmer versus Will Jacks. Could make things very, very interesting indeed at the top of the table. But at the opposite end of the table, we do have Gloucestershire sat rank bottom of Division 1 so far. And you know what? Just looking at the batting and bowling averages for Gloucestershire so far this summer, they have only got two players averaging over 50, who are Chris Dent and Glenn Phillips, with Jacob Bethel, who only came in for one game, averaging 49. Other than that, a lot of players averaging in the low 30s and high 20s. And then with the ball in hand, a bit like Warwickshire, Tom Price, by the way, having a great season so far. He's taken 11 wickets in 3 matches, an average of 19.72. But after that, the next best average is 35.9. So for Gloucestershire, it really does pain me to say this. I think they're done in Division 1 this year. I still think they've got it within them to produce a few shocks. I really do believe that. And I think that derby between Somerset and Gloucestershire does have the potential to be a very good match between those two West Country sides. But I just look at the team. They've been desperately unlucky with injuries, in particular at the top end of the season. they don't have a lot of experienced options. The overseas players, aside from Zafar Gohar, haven't been as available as other counties have been. So it's been a very rough season, and I do feel very sympathetic to both the Gloucestershire team and, of course, the fans. But if they are to take any positives away from this game, Kieran, what can Gloucestershire take heading into the next few rounds from this Essex game?
It's interesting that you mentioned Tom Price, obviously taking 3 for 59. I actually wrote for the Cricketer before the start of the season a piece on under 23 players to watch out for from each county, and Tom Price was the player that I picked for Gloucestershire, and he looks this season one of their most potent assets with the ball. So I think his wickets are definitely something for them to take as a positive. Otherwise, you're looking around from this game particularly, there's not many positives to take from a drubbing like that, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, I must say, but for Gloucestershire, it's just one of those seasons. It really is. I think Division 2 does beckon, but hopefully for the Gloucestershire fans, they can just win one of their remaining games, you know, put a smile on their faces and just end on a positive note on what's been a very, very disappointing season for the West Country-based outfits. But talking of the West Country then, what a beautiful transition that is to talk about the team which appears in our final game in Division 1 this week. I'm of course talking about Somerset County Cricket Club, as the West Country outfits played out a very high scoring draw against Lancashire up at Southport Cricket Club. Now, before we talk about Somersets, we can't talk about this game, can we, Kieran, without mentioning a certain former England opener by the name of Keaton Jennings. This was quite simply sensational. Jennings scored a resplendent 318 from 426 balls, which included 28 fours, four sixes, and he became just the sixth player in Lancashire's history to score a triple century, and also the first county cricket centurion since Sean Dixon back in 2017. Now, yes, the wicket was flat. It wasn't great for the bowlers, and at times the bowling could have been better from both sides. But in your opinion, Kieran, or at least in your view, how would you summarise and describe this innings from Keaton Jennings? It was a real imperious knock, and a knock of intent, wasn't it, from the Lancashire opener?
Yeah, I watched the highlights of, well, I think it would have been day three this morning. I think he started on in the 70s, I want to say, something like that, might have been 60s or 70s, and then has gone on in the space of a day to hit 300. Just bringing up milestone after milestone. Interestingly, in the press box at Scarborough, when it was announced that he was on 299, there were whisperings of a test call-up. Whether or not that's going to happen, I'm not sure. But I believe he's now hit something like 750 runs in the Championship this season, pretty much half of them coming in the past sort of 2 days alone. So in current form, he looks like a very good, I don't want to say a very good option, but I mean, it might be one that England might be considering. I don't know. They don't tend to like to go back to people who've already had a chance, but hitting 300 is no small feat.
Well, it isn't. Again, he is the first triple centurion in county cricket in 5 years. Sean Dixon was the last one in 2017, but it's interesting you mention the England whispers, because I was going to ask the exact same question. If we look at the stats so far in this year's championship, Keaton Jennings in six matches has scored 771 runs at an average of 96.37, striking at 58.01. He scored three centuries and one half century, and he's done that within the space of just eight innings. So he's scoring at the very least 50 every two innings, essentially every single match at this point. Is there, even if it is just the slightest slither of hope, is there a chance that Keaton the Jet Jennings can replace one of England's openers and play for the Three Lions and a Crown in Test cricket again?
I mean, you look at the strike rate, I believe you said it was 58 or something like that. Mm-hmm. Currently, a strike rate of 58 doesn't get you into the England team. But I mean, not everybody in the England team is striking absolutely as quickly as they can do. I mean, Alex Lees does seem to have upped his strike rate a bit at the top, but, you know, isn't one that's going to come out and play Bazball, which is something Brendan McCullum doesn't like the sound of for some reason from the off. So, I mean, whether or not he will get looked at, I'm not sure. I think the next option at the top would be Ben Compton, who is sort of in the same ilk that he doesn't really score very quickly, but occupies the crease well and has scored a lot of runs this season. But I don't think they're going to throw away Zach Crawley anytime soon, even if he's in very bad form. And yet, if there was somebody else that would come in and usurp one of those guys, I don't think it would be Keaton Jennings. I think, as an outside choice, Rory Burns has probably got more of a chance because he's been there more recently and did look to score quite quickly this week. But again, 300's a very good knock, so anything is possible, I suppose.
Well, it is. It is. Anything is possible. The door is never shut. It's always slightly ajar when it comes to international cricket. So who knows? Keaton Jennings. He's not doing himself any disservice, though, with knocks like that. Again, just the sixth player in Lancashire's history to score a triple century. I think he's got an outside chance, you know. And he's an excellent player of spin. That's always been his magnum opus, hasn't it? His playing of spin and that knock in Mumbai in 2016 was testament to that. But we'll have to wait and see. Again, it's the eternal question, isn't it? Who's going to open the batting for England? The carousel continues, but who knows? It could be Keaton at some point in the future. But aside from that triple century from Keaton Jennings, just a couple of knocks I wanted to mention from a Somerset perspective. First and foremost, Lewis Goldsworthy, bringing up a maiden first-class ton with 130 from 262 balls. I'm delighted for him. He just seems like a very hard-working, good, honest cricketer. And he's been very impressive for Somerset ever since making his debut in the Bob Willis Trophy. He really did look accomplished. He looked comfortable. He looked calm and assured at the crease this week. And he was joined in the middle by one of the absolute standouts from the Under-19 World Cup, a certain James Rowe, who cashed in quite brilliantly on county championship debut, scoring 70 from 135 balls. And then in the second innings as well, he showed a completely different side to his game. He dug in, scoring 23 from 111 deliveries. So Kieran, before we talk about the bowling and we look at the tables and wrap up today's show, just a few words on those two young batters, Lewis Goldsworthy and James Rowe. How impressed were you with their respective efforts in this game in Southport?
I think looking at Lewis Goldsworthy's knocks, he is probably the reason that Somerset have drawn this game. Obviously, a maiden first-class 100, I believe it was, really good knock. And then in the second innings, he's sort of dug in and kept Lancashire out there when wickets have fallen around him, for him to strike at 34 and still accumulate. Very good knock. And if he gets out in that situation, obviously then James Rowe, Lewis Gregory, Roller van der Merwe all get out as well. You're looking around going, there's a chance that Lancashire could bowl Somerset out here. For James Rowe as well, 23 of 111, just properly digging in for someone so young to sort of have the wherewithal to know, right, I need to stay here, because afterwards you're looking at Gregory and van der Merwe probably can dig in, but they're probably more known for an attacking brand of cricket. So for the two youngsters to just go out there, dig in and keep Lancashire in the field is probably the reason that Somerset have come away with that game with a draw.
100%, because they did almost throw it away on day four as a result of some excellent bowling from young left-arm off-spinner Jack Morley, who took a maiden first-class five-wicket haul, 5 for 69 from 35.1 overs. And I just wanted to draw attention, really, to Jack Morley's start to life in first-class cricket. He's only played 3 matches, but he's taken 16 wickets, an average of 23.25. He looks like a real prospect. And again, we talk about revs, we talk about flight and drift. They are the 3 pillars for attacking off-spin bowlers. He seems to have got all 3 in abundance. So watch out for him, Lancashire fans. I think he's a really good prospect. Still only young, he's got plenty of time to mature, hone and develop his game. But the initial signs of Jack Morley look very, very promising indeed. But in terms of the game itself, it was a little bit of a high-scoring draw. The wicket at Southport didn't offer tons for the bowlers. Yes, at times the bowling could have been better. You mentioned it early on in the show, actually, Kieran, about the lack of, I suppose, just attacking the stumps. That was something which I think both sides could have done a bit more in this game, maybe gone a little bit outside the box with their field placements as well. But this is definitely a big result for Somerset, isn't it? If you had to choose between the two sides, Somerset would be the happier with this result in Southport this week.
Absolutely, yeah. Obviously, it looks at the end like they could have lost it. So for them to come out of the draw is a very good result for them. Looking in hindsight from a Lancashire point of view, you're thinking possibly if they'd declared a little bit earlier, having then taken 7 wickets in Somerset's second innings, if they'd have come off a little bit earlier, they possibly could have given themselves a little bit more of a chance of winning it. I'm not sure if they were wanting to wait until Jennings got to 300. I'm not sure what point of the game that was at. But yeah, Somerset will definitely be the happier of the two sides with a draw, you would have thought.
100%, Kieran. I would agree with that. And although they're not right back in the mix when it comes to that relegation, I suppose survival hunt, they're not right back in the mix in terms of the middle of the table. It has just given them that little glimmer of hope, hasn't it? If they do win one of their games, they're right back up there with the likes of Kent and Warwickshire. So I think Somerset will be happier out of the two sides. Yes, you could argue Lancashire could have been a bit more attacking with the declaration, but on that surface, I think they did very well to get 7 wickets. So it's just one of those. It does happen. We do have these high-scoring draws, but I think for Somerset, they will definitely take that more than the Red Rose of Lancashire will. But talking of that result then, and I suppose the other 4 games in Division 1 this week, let's have a look at how the table shapes up at the end of the 10th round. So at the top of Division 1 are Surrey County Cricket Club on 165 points. In second are Hampshire on 150 points. In third are Lancashire on 137 points. In fourth, fifth and sixth are Essex, Northamptonshire and Yorkshire on 118, 103 and 101 points respectively. All 3 of those counties have got a game in hand over the sides above them. In seventh are Warwickshire on 95 points. In eighth are Kent on 90 points. In ninth, with a game in hand, are Somerset on 72 points. And in 10th and bottom place of Division 1 are Gloucestershire County Cricket Club on 55 points. So still all to play for. I do think we've got a distinct top 4 and the rest in Division 1 now in terms of a relegation mix, a relegation battle, the dogfight, as we keep on referring to it as. But 5 games remaining for the vast majority of these sides. We are in for a blockbuster conclusion to the 2022 County Championship in Division 1. But Kieran, that is essentially it for part 1 of the 10th round review show. Thank you as always for coming on. It's been an absolute pleasure discussing all things county cricket with you today, mate. Just before we say our final goodbyes, do you have anything to plug or promote? Social media channels, websites, anything like that?
Just my Twitter at @CP_McCarthy. And if anybody would like to go and look at any of my reports over the past 4 days on the Yorkshire Surrey game, they are on my Twitter.
Well, there you go, folks. If you want to go and give Kieran a follow, you can find the links to his Twitter and his various social media platforms using the links in the podcast description below. But that is it from us 2 here at the County Cricket Podcast for today's episode. To each and every single one of you wonderful listeners, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.